All right, so we're taking up some psukim in the book of Malachi. And it's all together three chapters. And the last chapter is read on Shabbos HaGadol. And we're not going to go through the whole thing right now, but we're just going to take up some of the closing verses. Okay. At the end, it's a reference to the future redemption, the messianic redemption. For example, on leading up to the final psukim, for behold, this is on verse 19, the day is coming, burning like an oven. All the wanton ones and all the evildoers will be stubble, and the coming day will set them ablaze, says Hashem, master of legions. It will leave them no root and branch. The Torah here is making a prediction, a prophecy with regard to the Messianic era. And I just discussed it recently, that on the one hand, the essence of Mashiach is a intellectual transformation, that the world will be transformed from its evil ways through knowledge of the truth. And that will come about mainly through the force of the teachings and the personality of the Melech HaMashiach, of the Messianic King. At the same time, it talks about these dire, cataclysmic war types of war. And pretty much, I mean, Christians for sure are aware of this apocalypse, that there's going to be some type of a tremendous war. War of Gog and Magog and so on and so forth. So, at first glance, it seems to be contradictory, especially since we associate the Messianic era with peace. That's the essence of the situation. The explanation that I've always given is that there's no real contradiction. And that, but we do see one thing, that up to a point, it's possible to have what we call the redemption from evil. That what's lacking in the world today? Why do we find so much corruption and so much evil? So bottom line, we maintain it's because of false ideas. That people essentially have a false idea of the good. And that's the ultimate problem that mankind faces. Because people are going to operate in terms of what they regard as the good. And since what they regard as the good is not justice, is not perfection, but it's material advancement, egotistical advancement, which leads to conflict. So conflict is built into the system. And you're not going to get rid of it until there is a absolute transformation of values. Now, how is that going to be achieved? So on the one hand, we put tremendous emphasis on the capability of people to change. That with the proper teaching, they can change. And that's the whole idea of Yazov Rosh Hadarko, that the wicked should abandon his path, and the sinful person his thoughts, and return to Hashem, because he has much forgiveness. So that's one idea that, it's another one theme, that God always waits for the Russia. It seems to be a very optimistic kind of a theme. That we really believe that the wicked can change. And what's going to bring about that change? The teachings. But there's a different element. It would seem from this that the perfection of the world will not be able to be achieved without a certain element of destruction. Root and branch. That the certain incorrigibles, that man does reach a point beyond which he can't return. And you can't live side by side. The wicked cannot live side by side with the good. Because either they will distract them, attack them. There'll be constant strife. You can't dedicate your energies to the service of God if you're under threat. And you have to maintain armaments. That's part of the idea of Mashiach. That they'll abolish weaponry, so to speak. They'll beat their swords into plowshares. And they won't study war. They even mentioned that point. They won't study war anymore. Why is that important? It's not just that they won't conduct war, but they'll be free of the need to devote mental energy to the conduct of war. That energy will be diverted towards the study of abstract truth. But there's going to be a cataclysm, so to speak. That's the prediction. Must it be that way? Well, theoretically, if people would listen. But it's saying the reality is that they're not going to listen. There's going to be those who will not listen, and there will be a war. We don't know too much about the particulars. That's why people are always speculating. Every generation tries to associate the messianic predictions with their own times. So the nuclear bomb and the Cold War, the communists versus the West, and that faded out, so to speak. It could reignite, but in the last 20 years or so, it seems that there was a detente between the two sides. Now it's with the Islamic. If the Islamics get a hold of a nuclear weapon, so people are convinced that's going to be the case. What's going to happen? We don't know. I mean, irrespective of these prophecies and to what they apply, the reality is that there are problems out there that have to be dealt with. So that's a serious concern. That Iran is striving to get the bomb, and other countries, Pakistan, if the Taliban takes over Pakistan and they control the nuclear weapons, these are tremendous dangers. Iran is the greatest danger because they've said openly that what they plan to use it against Israel. These are interesting times, but we don't know if it's messianic. To say that this is what exactly is being referred to and so forth, nobody knows. It could be that these issues will be resolved. Well, how, we don't know, either diplomatically and they'll be prevented, or Israel will attack them and destroy their nuclear facilities like they attacked Iraq. And what consequences, we don't know. And then a couple hundred years can go by. And then it turns out that was a blip on the screen, but it wasn't the messianic phenomena that's being spoken about here. But for you that revere my name, a son of righteousness will shine forth with healing on its wings. And you shall go forth and prosper like fatted calves. So all these things are very interesting images. That is to say that whatever happens, the world will not be destroyed in that cataclysm. Essentially, it'll be the wicked, but the righteous ones will be protected. And to the contrary, they'll go on to a new type of prosperity once the wicked are removed from the scene. You will trample the wicked, for they will be like dust under the soles of your feet on the day that I prepare, says Hashem, Master of Legions. So that's direct prophecy with regard to the fact that you'll destroy the wicked. Now he goes on. The Rambam cites the next pasuk. Remember the teaching of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him at Horeb for all Israel, meaning in the presence of all Israel. Decrees and ordinances. Now the Rambam talks about this. One of the proofs that he cites, that the Torah is eternal, and is not subject to any change, and that all the subsequent prophets did not come to create anything new, to add to the Torah, to subtract from the Torah, or to make any changes. That the Torah that Hashem gave us is immutable. And he cites Malachi, who was the last of the prophets. And that's what he said, Zichru Torah Moshe. Remember the Torah of Moshe. Because that is the revelation which is eternal. Now, he says, behold, I will send you as Eliyah. It doesn't say Eliyahu. So it's not even absolute that is a reference to Eliyahu. But I think most people take it that way. Hanavi, the prophet. Before the day, before the great and awesome day of Hashem. So that great and awesome day of Hashem is when God will manifest himself in the war against the wicked. The wicked will be destroyed. And we've discussed many, many times that's always a prerequisite for the Kiddush Hashem. When people see the wicked triumph, it causes them to reject the idea of God. What's the point of the sending of Eliyahu HaNavi? The Rambam mentions this But he says that there are various interpretations because we don't have a fixed Masora. We don't have a fixed teaching as to the exact order, unfolding of the events leading to the Mashiach. We just know in the general sense what is going to happen, what's going to be achieved, which I've gone over many times. Thus, that protects us from falling prey to a false Messiah. Because objectively speaking, there are certain things that must happen. And if they don't happen, then this person is not the Mashiach. And according to that, it's clear that Mashiach hasn't come. And all the individuals who pretended, or people thought they were, or claimed, were, it was wrong, it was false. What's the idea, though? He mentions that there are different rabbinic traditions, and one of them will be that God will send a Navi, a prophet. And basically, I know those who maintain that it's Eliyahu. The Rambam says in Shoftim, the last chapter, Halacha Beis, that there are among the Chachamim, the sages, who say that before the coming of the Mashiach, Eliyahu will come. So even that is not absolute. Although it's, well, it doesn't say Eliyahu, but it sounds close. It says Eliyahu, which could be a shortened version. And here it's saying that he will come, somebody will come. But perhaps the Rambam is learning that it's not necessarily a reference to Eliyahu. So he says that there is some of the Chachamim, some of the sages maintained that before the coming of Mashiach, Eliyahu will come. And he says, and all of these things, and the like, nobody knows how they're going to be until they, there's no way to predict them until they actually come about. Because they're closed matters by the prophets. They closed. They didn't inform us. And he says also the sages didn't have any Kabbalah. That means they didn't have any oral teaching, transmission on these matters. So it's left to people's speculations. It's in accordance with how you read the Psukim. But there's no absolute way of knowing. That's why he says there's many arguments on this. But he says all these particular kinds of things are not really that important. He also mentions that it appears from the simple language of the prophets that at the beginning of the Messianic era, there'll be the war of Gog and Magog. So that's sort of like taken for granted. He doesn't tell you anything more about it. And that before the war of Gog and Magog, a Navi will appear among Israel. That's what he's saying. Apparently that's what he's taking this pasuk to refer to, a prophet, that there will be a prophet. Liyasha Yisrael, to straighten them, ulahochin libam, and to prepare their heart. And he quotes the pasuk, Hine anochi sholeach lachem es Eliyah. So he takes the pasuk to mean that it doesn't necessarily mean Eliyah is basically a Navi, perhaps someone like him. Or, some say actually, of course, if it's going to be Eliyahu HaNavi, it means he has to be resurrected. But that's not a problem. Because we maintain that that's one of the fundamentals, that there will be resurrection. And he says, but he's not coming to render impure, pure rather, those who are Tamei, nor to render impure those who are pure, or to disqualify people that are in the... that have a certain assumption of kashrus, for example, converts, whatever, people who've been accepted. But it's possible always that there was a technical mistake and they're not really, or even a mamzer. Somebody could be a mamzer and nobody knows about it. That's not going to be his purpose. It's rather lasum shalom ba'olam, that the purpose is to establish peace in the world. Shenemar, as it says, v'heishiv levavas al banim. He'll restore the hearts of the fathers to the children, to the sons. So, getting back to the verse, He says that I'm going to send you Elio Hanavi before the coming of the day of Hashem, the awesome and the wondrous. And he will restore the heart of fathers to children, and the heart of children to their fathers. Now the last part is strange, lest I come and strike the land with destruction. What's the connection between the two ideas? What's the relationship between the fact that he will restore the hearts of the fathers and the sons with this part two, lest I come and smite the land? Rashi says, Veheshiv levavos, and he'll restore the heart of the fathers, La Kadosh Baruch Hu, to God. Al banim, two sons. He takes Rashi as saying, Al yedei banim, via the sons. Yomar lebanim, derech ava v'ratzon. He will say to the sons, the way of love and will. Lechu v'dibru al avoseichem. Go and speak to your fathers. Lechos b'darchei hamakom. To seize the ways of God. V'chein v'leiv banam al avosam. And also the hearts of the children to their fathers. Kach shamati mishmo shel Rebbe Menachem. Well, he doesn't explain how it works the other way around. Although perhaps that is that in the second case, he will restore the hearts of the fathers. Sorry, the second part is v'heshiv leva v'leiv banim. He'll restore the hearts of the sons to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How? Through the fathers, I guess. That the fathers will learn, and they'll teach it to their sons. Strange. The whole thing is strange because if the intention is that the people will be returned to Torah. So, of course, there's fathers and sons, but here it seems to be, it implies that there's some connection between them in terms of how they return. Now, the Radak says, V'heshev levavos al banim, kamo im banim, with sons. V'chein lev banim al avosam, kamo im avosam. Kolomar, ha'avos v'abanim yachdav. The fathers and sons together. What does that mean, together? What is that referring to? I mean, sometimes it's together and sometimes it's not. Now, the second part, lest I come and smite the land to destruction. So the Radak says, therefore, he will warn them in order that they should be Balei Tshuva for the day that's coming, so that he won't smite the entire land and they'll all be desolate. For those who will not guard carefully his warning, they'll be consumed in the desert of the nations, or for the day of judgment in the land of Israel. But those who are careful, who are warned, they will glow like the light of the firmament. And those who are matzdikei harabim, those who cause the masses or the many to be righteous, will be like the stars eternally. The importance of this is, I think, because it's not a simplistic type of thing. People have this fantasy about Mashiach. And, you know, Mashiach will just come on the stage one day and automatically everything will be better and so on and so forth, which is not the case. There's a reality in terms of how it's going to come about, and it's very, very important that people should do tshuva. That it, we shouldn't imagine that we don't have to really do anything and just sit back. Well, first of all, the coming of Mashiach is connected to tshuva. That is, that the sooner the Jews do tshuva, that can have an effect. So Mashiach can come. I mean, the Rambam says it's a guarantee. If the Jewish people were to do tshuva. So alongside of this, due to the fact that the difficulty of doing tshuva, perhaps that's the main point, that there's a vital need to do tshuva. Now, this is my interpretation, is that we have to understand what's the obstacles to doing tshuva. We talk about it all the time. What are some of the obstacles? Well, I maintain that there's, aside from the ordinary obstacles, that people are weak and they're not in control of their emotions and so on and so forth. That's true. That could be one tshuva. But in terms of practicing Judaism correctly, that's more complicated. Because that's a good question. Are we practicing it correctly? I don't mean technically speaking from a halachic standpoint. I'm talking about our understanding of what Judaism is. The value system, the philosophy of Judaism, the theology. You have so many different groups. And they're not all the same as to how they approach things or understand things. It's not the same religion, other than that we're practicing the same rituals. So how is it possible to do tshuva if you don't have a correct idea of Judaism? And that's a question. I'm wondering about that. As I've mentioned, if people are practicing a brand of Judaism, that's not correct. So, but let's say within that sect or that group, so certain people are not that serious, aren't performing it, and then they want to do tshuva and they want to perform Judaism more seriously. But when they say that, they're talking about their Judaism. Now, if that Judaism is the correct one, so then it's tshuva, it's very good. But let's say it's the incorrect one. So now they're more involved in a version of Judaism that, which is incorrect. Is that really tshuva? Thus, according to this, one has a right to raise the question, is it possible for the Jews to do tshuva today? How can you do tshuva if you don't have the correct ideas? What are you going to return to? You're going to return to your understanding of what the correct ideas are, but that itself is not correct. So what good is the tshuva? Let's say that there is a very sincere desire on the part of people, for whatever reason, to do tshuva. Is it in vain? Assuming that they really have no way of knowing. There's so many different Judaisms out there. Whether it's Hasidic, and within Hasidic there's so many different groups. And among the non-Hasidic there's so many different groups. So, how is the person going to decide? How can he do tshuva? He has the sincere desire to return to Hashem, but he doesn't know which is the correct version at this point in time. In my opinion, maybe this has something to do with it. That is, perhaps the process of tshuva will come about in stages. That is to say that there is something to be said for a sincere desire. A person can be in a state of tshuva in the sense that he really regrets and he's really determined and he wants to. But at this stage of the game, he really doesn't know enough. Now, you can find this in many cases, that a person has not been taking care of his health or diet, whatever it is, in an ordinary situation. And he may find himself at a point where he's really absolutely regretful and he wants to give up the past and he wants to adopt a new approach and live correctly and eat correctly, the right foods, the right amounts, eat correctly. Yeah.
they were doing bloodletting.
Yeah.
And so a person could want to be healing, and you would harm people by taking out their blood and making them even weaker.
Right. Yeah, truth is, I just dozed off. I'm really tired. Whew. I just realized the last point I made about but he doesn't know the person doesn't know the way to go. But that's not worthless. That is, he's much closer, because if he should discover the correct doctor and the doctor would help him, so then he's in a good position, as opposed to where he was before. We had no inclination. So I think that's what it's talking about over here. That there will be a change. The people will come to a realization that they're on the wrong path. And there'll be a desire to serve God. But they'll then be in the dilemma of not knowing how to do so. And then Hashem, because of His mercy, will give them a chance. Because there will be the messianic process, which will bring about tremendous transformations. And there will be the destruction. And those who are not tzaddikim, are not righteous, will be caught up in the destruction. So because people, that in my opinion is the mercy of God. That because there will be people who are genuine and sincere and want to return, and if they had the proper teacher at this point, they would listen. So Hashem will send a teacher, a Navi. That says the Liyasher, to establish peace, to pave the way. And through teaching. Actually, it seems to imply two things. One is the one will affect the other. That is the relationships. It mentions father and son, parents and children, which is an essential one. I guess it's probably representative of many families. That there'll be this bond of the families, and then they'll have the teachers. And because you see, let's put it this way. It doesn't mean that everybody will be connected directly to the prophet. That's an interesting point. You see a different element in terms of the harmony that should exist in a family or in a social unit. That is, not everybody is equipped. That's why it says sometimes the son will be affected through the father. Sometimes the father will be affected by the son. Why can't the father get it directly? Oh, because you see that there's not everybody's on the level. Not everybody's on the level to get the wisdom. But if he's not on the level, if he has a good relationship with the one who is on the level and will accept him as his teacher, so then that's how it spreads. That's how the knowledge spreads. That's the way it works. Like, you don't need, you know, everybody... Not everybody is a teacher, but if you have people that can gain this knowledge from the Navi or from other people that he teaches, that's how it spreads out. And then families, communities, why? Because they have a good relationship. If they have a good relationship, they're willing to learn from them. So that's apparently an indication. That's why it goes both ways. That sometimes it's the father who learns and transmits it to the son. That's if they have a good relationship. But it can even work the other way around. Sometimes, you have fathers who never really studied, then their sons learn. They go to a yeshiva, maybe they go to Israel, and they learn, and they bring it back. And the father learns it from them. So that's part of the goodness, the mercy of Hashem, in the days leading up to the Mashiach. So that even if we can't do the tshuva properly, it's mentioning over here the powerful emotions. You know, fathers and sons have powerful emotions. But those, because of that, due to the nature of the relationship, the emotional character of the relationship, so there's a lot of resistances. Yeah, but when those resistances are overcome, so it works the other way. Then there's a bond, it's a very strong bond. And you can really gain things from that because of that strong bond. So that's really one particular case, but I think it's really intended to illustrate that whole category of relationships. And where there can be a lot of resistances, rebelliousness, but once that's overcome, so then those very same relationships can be extremely beneficial. Interesting. We read this on Tisha B'Av. Very appropriate, of course. It talks about if we sin against God, then God will exile and disperse us, and we'll remain small in number amongst the Goyim, that God will lead us there. And we'll worship there gods, the works of the hands of people, wood and stone, which do not see and do not hear and do not eat and do not smell. And you will seek out from there the Lord your God, and you will find him, for you will search him with all of your heart. Search for him with all of your heart. The implication is that we haven't found God. Well, who is this referring to? Is this referring to only the non-religious? That's how most people read it, that there's going to be a lot of non-religious Jews and they'll become religious again. I don't think that's what it means. I think it means that you'll search. You'll search and you'll find. That means you'll find God, means the true idea. It says, when it's when you're in distress, batzar lecha, and all of these things have come upon you in the end of days, and you'll return to the Lord your God and listen to his voice. Seems to be redundant, but it's clear that the catalyst will be the sufferings at the end of days. There's two processes. You'll be kashdem and then v'shavta. Because you can't have v'shavta, you can't have return until you've discovered God. I think that, I mean, I'm learning it, that's the point that I'm making, my contention, that you can't do tshuva. I think this pasuk really bears it out. How can you do tshuva if you haven't done any searching? And it doesn't matter that you're religious or not, I don't think that's what it is. That's not a real tshuva. Real tshuva is the perfection of the individual. And if he doesn't have the correct idea of perfection, so how can he do it? So phase one will be a sincere effort to seek out God. And the Navi is saying that God will help us with that. That if we do so with all of our hearts, then we'll find him. It's not that, this pasuk is not saying how, but I think that's what Malachi is saying. Now once we have that, then phase two will be real tshuva. And once you have real tshuva, so that's it. Then you'll have Yemos HaMashiach. The problem in people who strive, like Bali Tshuva and everything, is that it's not their fault. But very often they're not really searching for the truth. They're searching for a certain emotional experience, which is associated with religion. And that makes it difficult. That's, but you see, here's the point. Now I can understand this prophecy. Because it doesn't matter what the motivation is or what the person is searching for. When the person is in that state, he could be amenable to reason. Because he really doesn't know much about Judaism. So he goes to the teacher. Now, if the teacher has the correct ideas, so then he can help him a great deal. Because at that point, he's very open to listening. Even though he was searching for a certain emotional religious experience, but once he hears true ideas, so he'll become attached to that. He'll say, well, I didn't know what Judaism is. I'm really amazed that the system and the ideas, and so on and so forth. But the problem we have today is that the ones who they go to the contrary, they reinforce all the religious emotions, and they give them the kind of a understanding, if you want to use that word, of Judaism, that's very, very much in line with their religion. They only make the matter worse, in a sense. It certainly does not elucidate, it doesn't enlighten them. But in those days, that God will send Eliyahu. Well, whether that's to be taken literally, that it'll be a prophet. See, the Rambam says that's an opinion. But perhaps it won't be specifically a prophet, but it'll be teachers. There will be a divine providence that will provide a source of true understanding, so that those who do seek God out will be able to find them. Because it's not their fault that they don't have the truth, because it's been lost. And the fact that there's hardly any teachers that are going to teach them the truth is not the fault of these people. So Hashem will provide us with the means of discovering him, provided that we're sincere and we seek him out with all our heart. But that really is the sin qua non. That's the real requirement, the prerequisite, that first we have to search for God. And only then is it possible to do tshuva. What I disagree with is that the assumption that most people have is that if only we wanted to, we could do tshuva. And it's just a matter that we're too lazy, or we're too overcome by our emotions, and so on and so forth, and we're not prepared to really keep the Torah. But that in my opinion, is not the whole story. There's a bigger problem, and that is that before you can do tshuva, you have to have knowledge. Dalef nei mi'ato omed. And that we're lacking the real knowledge of Judaism. And that makes it impossible. But that there is a solution to that problem. But that requires a tremendous degree of honesty, truthfulness, a genuine search for the truth. Not just the halachic, but I mean in terms of the underlying fundamentals. That's where people have very powerful emotions. Of what they would, it's wishful thinking, to satisfy a religion that's along the lines of their desires. That's a big problem.